gonna need about 3 times more fluorspar, and just simply is just not there. Even though the price is kind of 50%, but people are still somewhat sleeping in North America. People has woken up already in China, in Mongolia, in South Africa, and in Australia, where the fluorspar mining companies are being valued at hundreds of millions of dollars compared to $20 million of clean tech today. And there is some rational and logic to it. It's just North American investors are always late to the game. I mean, if you look at AI, right? NVIDIA was $1 trillion 3 years ago. And when these data centers about to be turned on, the lights about to turn on there, say, hey, wait a second, we need memory.
Good day here, Steve Yang here with Natural Resource Stocks. I have with me John Lee, CEO and Executive Chairman of Cleantech CTV. John, how are you today?
Good to be back, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on. So, John, before we start, if you can give us the ticker, the website, how people can find Cleantech CTV, where you're trading.
And certainly, when I come to your program in September, about 8-9 months ago, we talked about Cleantech. The symbol is CTV, Charlie Television, CTV. And our website homepage is cleantechctv.com.
Well, John, tell me about Cleantech. I mean, for those of us who don't know, if you can give us just kind of the brief history of where this inspiration came from and what kind of company are you?
Yeah, Steve, when I came on the program in September, Cleantech was 6 cents. It went to 50 cents 3 months later, maybe rubbing a bit of good luck from your channel. And now the stock is settling at around 13 cents. Cleantech stands for Cleantech Vanadium Mining Corp. It's a company that spun out of Silver Elephant about 4 years ago, focusing on North America critical minerals. So we started out with vanadium and nickel. Subsequently, we sold the nickel project to the First Nations that was on their land. And they liked our project so much, they forced our hands, and we had to forfeit that project. And then we used the money to start staking and acquiring fluorspar projects in Kentucky. So currently, Cleantech has two verticals. One is to do with vanadium, which is critical minerals in Nevada. And then the other one is where we spend a lot of time on right now, and that is fluorspar in Kentucky.
So where are you right now? So the vanadium project is in Nevada, and the fluorspar project is in Kentucky. Is that correct?
Yes.
And if you can tell us kind of the stages they're in, do you see yourself as having two flagships right now? What kind of gets the priority in terms of time, money, and resources?
Right now, it's all about fluorspar. And the reason being is vanadium. Well, first of all, fluorspar and vanadium, both of which I can call the energy metals or energy critical minerals, because they all got to do with energy production and energy storage. Vanadium batteries is one of those proven technology. But unfortunately, vanadium prices are down right now because the majority of the vanadium is used for steel rebar, reinforcement bar constructions. And the construction activity has not really rebounded since COVID. So the project's on standby. And nonetheless, vanadium project does demonstrate the company's ability to navigate the permitting and engineering sort of obstacles and challenges in the United States. In that, Cleantech is one of the very few companies that were able to reach the positive record of decision from Bureau of Land of Management for the EIS, Environmental Impact Statement. So that is a federal permit. And I believe we're the only Canadian mining company that were able to achieve that milestone. However, right now, Steve, it's all about fluorspar. Fluorspar prices has gone up 50% in the last 3 years, and it's all got to do with energy storage and energy production. For your audience, if I can just rehash real quick for those, I was coming program 6 months ago. 9 months ago, we talked about that. Is that I'm sure there you probably have some uranium bugs in your audience. Is that every uranium yellow cake coming out of the ground need to be married with 6-fluorine? That is the gasification process to levitate the uranium into gaseous form, of which then you go through the centrifuge process. It's kind of like spinning your dryer for laundry to spin out the U-235. That's the fissile uranium from the U-238. That's the plutonium, heavy uranium. And that is a fissile, it is the fissile uranium that can go through the fission process of which you can bombard with neutron, and the fission happens, and the energy gas production happens. So every uranium requires six fluorine to be married, to levitate, and to go through that enrichment process. Similarly, a lot of people talk about batteries. Batteries are used for EV, and also a big element of batteries that nobody talk about is artificial intelligence. And the coming new sort of the new renaissance of robotics, in that six fluorine atoms is required to be married to a lithium or sodium. So fluorine acts as a salt. Think of a battery, right? The cathode is the transition metals in manganese, nickel, and iron, and cobalt, and the anode is graphite. But what's in the middle is the salt, the swimming pool. Think of the swimming pool, and that is fluorine. You need to add fluorine to be married to the lithium and sodium. These ones are the soldiers that carry the charges back and forth between the anode and the cathode. So sort of the I will call it a bit of a fluorine fluoride is it's a bit of like Robin to the Batman, the unsung hero that is powering the energy storage and energy production. And there's a lot of talk right now, Steve, about data centers consuming massive amount of water and power. And in Georgia, Michigan, in Nevada, California, and Texas, they're building Texas data center, Texas, like six times the football fields. And these data centers require tens of gigawatts of power. And just case an example, like the largest nuclear power plant in North America, Bruce Power, that's only like 6 megawatts. It took like more than a decade to build. So you're looking at, and the only way to make this data center viable and to continue to power the next generation of AI and robotics is to marry renewables, which is the largest growth in power production in China and elsewhere in the world, with energy storage. And that's why I came on your program 9 months ago, pounding on the table and say, now is the time to get into fluorspar. And I continue to stand by that. And it just seems like the day of inevitability of continued higher fluorspar prices is coming.
So you're trying to capitalize on the fluorspar low prices right now. Is the vanadium project on hold as you kind of are you shifting gears here? And what kind of project do you have over there in Kentucky?
Yeah, certainly, Steve. That's how we can talk. Happy to talk about the Vanadium project. It's a project the company spent over $20 million and assembled a strike, mineral strike of over 21 kilometers, several distinct deposits, federal permit ready, majority of the state permits being issued already. So I will call the project shovel ready, pending higher vanadium price. The company actually also bought a ranch to secure the water and the potential sage grouse credits. That's kind of the wild bird credits required to commission the project in Nevada. So that project is shovel ready, pending higher vanadium prices. However, like if we could just go back to what I talk about fluorspar. Well, fluorspar price has gone up already 50% in the last 3 years because China turned into an importer from being a net exporter. And China consumes today 70% of the global fluorspar supply, even though it self-produced 60%. That just shows you how acute the situation is. China right now is consuming around 7 million tons of fluorspar. And whereas the United States today is only at about 500,000 tons. So if the current administration want to achieve energy independence, want to supply semiconductors, big data centers, nuclear power plants, building batteries and for robotics, for EVs, for energy storage, for solar and solar farms and wind farms, it's going to need about three times more fluorspar, and just simply is just not there. Even though the price is kind of 50%, but people are still somewhat sleeping in North America. People has woken up already in China, in Mongolia, in South Africa, and in Australia, where the fluorspar mining companies are being valued at hundreds of millions of dollars compared to $20 million of clean tech today. And there is some rational and logic to it. It's just North American investors are always late to the game. I mean, if you look at AI, right? NVIDIA was $1 trillion 3 years ago, and when these data centers about to be turned on, the lights about to turn on, they say, "Hey, wait a second, we need memory." And all of a sudden, Micron came from nowhere and the price went up 5 times in 6 months. Micron's $1 trillion. So think of, in a way, think of the generation of artificial intelligence. The brain, right? The processing is NVIDIA. The memory is Micron. But the power, the batteries to power the robotics and the data centers is going to have to be Forespire. And then we can talk about a bit more in the robotics. Soon enough, there's going to be penetration in the robotics in your household, probably estimated around up to 1 billion robots in 5 years' time. In China, there's already a robot for companions that can do ballet dancing, they do kung fu, they can do marathon. I was just in Shanghai 2 weeks ago, and when I was at Marriott Hotel, they cook noodles. It's not just making coffees for you. And the phone operator, like I picked up the phone, I said, I need a pair of scissors. And it was AI. It was like, D-d-d-d-d-d-d, you want a pair of scissors, right? And it was crazy times. And so you're going to have 1 billion robots running around and selling for $30,000 a pop. And that's going to be all interconnected through SpaceX. And then these robots are going to hot swap their batteries. And these batteries are going to be all made out of fluorspar. So the writing is on the wall for these guys that missed the train on NVIDIA, on Micron, on Rare Earth, is fluorspar is opening up for a huge opportunity to ride this renaissance of artificial intelligence. That's why I see it, and that's why I've come on a number of programs. I said that this is the best investment opportunity I've come on for a long time, besides silver, which is my specialty. I'm happy to talk about silver too.
Yeah, you call the high silver prices, and back then I'm sure a lot of people thought you're you lost your marbles, but a lot of people think you're right to call that one. So you see, you're very bullish on fluorspar. I believe it's U.S. critical mineral. My
Yes.
understanding is that it's very dominated by China, like you said. It's used for steel, batteries, semiconductors, fridge technology stuff, but first of all, are there other major producers, any, if at all, domestic producers here? Who else is doing this?
Yeah, Steve, China produce 6 million tons of fluorspar domestically, but it's not enough. So it's going into Mongolia, which is the third largest producer. Mongolia does about 1 million tons. So China is consuming 7 million tons. It's still not enough. It's going to Africa and buying up African fluorspar. The only really produce the really viable or sizable producer to speak of is Mexico. And they do about 1.5 million tons of fluorspar. So if you look at Mongolia, China, and Mexico together, three amigos account for 85% of global fluorspar production. United States has next to zero, no meaningful fluorspar production to speak of. 90% of the fluorspar is coming from this Kentucky fluorspar district, of which Cleantech is the dominant player today. We're already a sample land patch the size of Manhattan, 17,000 acres with over 20 distinct deposits. So we really grabbed the bull by the horn. As I mentioned to you, the current fluorspar consumption in the US is only 500,000 tons. Most of it come from Mexico. Mexican fluorspar used to sell at around 30% discount to the Chinese fluorspar. But the Chinese, being a competitor, has turned into has evaporated. So what you're seeing is the discount that the Mexican offered to the Americans has completely gone. In fact, in some areas, the Mexican is selling at a premium to Asian fluorspar because of the shipping, right? Because saving of the shipping rates. And that just shows you the landscape has turned 180, and that's why you see a 50% increase in the fluorspar prices. Even at today's price, though, fluorspar per pound is around 20 cents a pound. So that compares to nickel as $7, copper at $6, even the lead and zinc at $1, $1.50. There's still a lot of room to grow before people waking up. Even if they were to wake up, there is very little industrial substitute because fluorspar is one of the most reactive element in the periodic table. It is the most reactive. And that's why it is able to tame the tiger, what I call it. Once fluorspar marries with lithium, right? Marries with sodium, marries with the hydrocarbon, and marries with sulfur, and marries with uranium. It stabilizes the element, and then which can be deployed to a range of application over 170. So we can easily see fluorspar prices go another 50% from where we are today, just based on the committed some applications in the United States. Like, let's talk about semiconductor, for example. NVIDIA and TSMC is building huge manufacturing facilities in Arizona. And Forsbar is required to carry all these exotic trace elements with other argon and xenon gases to carry the elements into the chamber. And then Forsbar gas, fluorine gas, is used to etch and imprint these circuits onto the wafer. And then towards the end, fluorine gas, hydrofluoric acid gas, is used to carry away the debris and to dissolve the and to eat away the debris from the chamber. So semiconductor applications account for around 5% of the total fluorine consumption today. But that number is rapidly rising. And it's no surprise, Steve, as of today, we have the largest auto manufacturers that are coming to us asking for fluorine for their circuitry. Autonomous driving, and we have the largest nuclear operator that's coming to us knocking on our door, and we have the largest semiconductor company from Taiwan that's knocking on our door. So we are a little no-name company with a very little footprint already, making a name of ourselves. The company is in a very in-depth discussion with a number of off-takers for fluorspar that's maybe coming on stream by 2028, and we'll not be surprised to see a binding optic agreement coming in before the end of the year.
So you purchased this property in
Kentucky?
It is
like the best thing since the sliced bread, Steve. And we've done a whole work. It really is.
So you, I can tell you're excited about Fluorspar, but how much Fluorspar do you have? If you can tell me a little bit about the Kentucky property you've obtained. It's my understanding it's got some, huge mining history there. Why is that significant?
Yes.
And how much do you think we have?
Yeah, Steve, this is a undiscovered, underappreciated district. It's called Illinois Kentucky Fluorspar District, IKFD, which accounted for 90% of the historical U.S. fluorspar production, especially in World War I and World War II. Recall that 30% of the fluorspar today is used as a fluxing agent for aluminum and for steel production. So what happened is when you're taking the iron ore, right, and aluminum ore from the ground, fluorine gas is used to create that oxidate, that layer, protection layer from oxidation and ease away the impurities. So it's only after World War II, up to about 1970, that U.S. production stopped because the Chinese low-price fluorspar flooded the international market. But this district had over 30 million tons of historical raw fluorspar production from this district. So all these chemical companies, refrigerant companies, steel companies, and this company, they're like, John, this project we used to buy from you before 50 years ago. So we have no problem with metallurgy. Currently, Cleantech is one of the largest, if not the largest, fluorspar landholder in the district. The district measures around 600 square miles. And the land holding is around 15%, 10 to 15% of the overall space. However, these assets we've acquired is a size of Manhattan sitting on over a dozen different faults, 20 different distinct deposits. The way you look at it, Steve, is if you've been to Manhattan, right, you have Union Square, you have Chelsea, you have Times Square, you have Central Park, you have Harlem, and you have Upper East Side, Upper West Side, Lower Manhattan. So think of it, and Statue of Liberty. Think of a Manhattan as our land package, and we have all these different areas. Each one of them could become a world-class project. Overall, 740 drill holes that had happened in our land package, and only around 20% of the area is being drilled. The lowest hanging fruits in those areas is being grabbed by Cleantech already. There is still a lot of exploration and greenfield exploration potential. However, I think anything that has a decent amount of drill holes or proven resources in the ground that's documented or already being acquired by Cleantech. And just to give you an idea, and collectively documented historical resources on our land package is close to 10 million tons. So if the U.S. if the U.S. consumption stays at 500,000 tons, there's 20 years worth of historical resources in the ground that we can dig up and supply the current U.S. Consumptions. Give me some idea of the value, Steve, of what our projects are worth. The company is about to start a 16-hole drill program in August. 16 holes is going to cost us $1.5 million because of inflation. So 740 drill holes is you're looking at $100 million worth of value on just drilling these assets. Secondly, our peer comparables in Australia has around 10 million tons of resource. After a joint venture with the Japanese, that company has gone from $100 million market cap to $800 million. I'm right now in Mongolia, of which Chinese is making huge foray into acquisitions of Mongolian fluorspar. Currently, Mongolian fluorspar is being valued at around $20 million for every million tons of fluorspar in the ground. So if the company CleanTech were able to prove out or convert or translate that 10 million tons of resource, even at a 50% conversion rate into the modern standards of 43-101 or drill compliant, you're looking at over $100 million in valuation, pegging on Mongolian valuation. But you want to go with Australian valuation, then we're looking at even a lot higher. So there is a whole lot of things to do. I mean, Steve, we can talk about permitting a little bit. Fraser Institute ranks Nevada as the best place to do mining business for make mining investments. I beg to differ. Kentucky's been better in that all of our assets rest on private land. We don't have to deal with the federal government. We don't need a permit to drill. And we put a CleanTech put out a news release just recently, 2 weeks ago, that the company is preparing a mining permit to submit by the end of the year and potentially making a construction decision, mining production decision this time next year.
So, just so I'm clear, did I hear that drilling is projected to start August 1st, like a couple weeks from now? And that's
Yes.
just right around the corner. Is
Yes.
that going as per your things are, is that where things stand right now? And where are you heading into that?
Yeah, it's going to be end of August, early September, subject to availability. Everything's backlogged. And the idea right now, Steve, is not, the company is not in the mood to window dressing or gaslighting our shareholders. But rather, everything that we do is geared towards production because we got all this largest consumer knocking on our door. So we're not going to drill anything more than necessary to come up with a mine plan with enough feed to the first year, just the first year of production. The processing plant is envisioned to be at around 500 tons per day or at about 200,000 tons of processing per year. And that will be about, after recovery, around 10% of the U.S. current fluorspar consumption. So we're going to produce around 60 to 80,000 tons of fluorspar per year. I think that's a very good size. Not necessary to disrupt the current sort of supply demand equilibrium and introducing this as a new player, and also to demonstrate a proof of concept that we can dig fluorspar out of the ground without challenges, without the NGOs, or without any issues. And then from there, we can expect massive scaling up because of all these customers that are knocking on our door asking for fluorspar. So you're going to see a whole array of activities that are all geared towards getting this project into production as soon as possible.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's get to your financing. Tell me about your recent raises you've had, how much cash you have in the bank and how much runway you have.
Yeah, Steve, we got a little bit complacent in that after we came on your program, the stock was 6 cents. We went to almost $100 million market cap. The stock was trading at 50 cents. So we were living on a lot of the warrants and options coming in. And so we avoided any fundraising altogether. We haven't raised any money in the last 3.5 years. So the company has been very cognizant and really watching out for anti-dilution. However, we're not going to do about $1 million financing right now. We look to close by the end of July. And that $1 million is going to go into our drill program and our continued permitting program. And in order to get to the finishing line of submitting the permit, we might be looking at additional rounds of financing towards the end of the year. However, like at the current price, around what, 13 cents, around $20 million market cap, we're about a fifth, right, of what we were 6 months ago. But in terms of land holding, in terms of progress, in terms of understanding of the fluorspar space, in terms of drill program and dialogue with off-takers and just knowledge of the fluorspar space, we're a lot further along than what we were 6 months ago. So we're gonna wrap this financing we're gonna wrap up this financing in the next couple of weeks, and we're gonna start our drill program. And then coinciding with the release of our drill results and the submission of our permits, we could be looking at potentially raising a bit more money to get us sort of to the point where we sign an off-taker agreement and potentially getting some financing from our off-taker by the end of the year.
John, if I want to go to your ownership, if you can just tell me about the share structure, if you can break down the options, warrants, any significant ownership that comes from insiders or institutions.
We have a fantastic share structure, Steve. Insiders, including myself and a few others, own around 60% of the shares.
Is it
As I
six zero
mentioned,
60?
60. CleanTech spun out upon Sober Elephant, so a lot of the CleanTech shares were dividend to share Sober Elephant shareholders. So a number of them had kept those shares, and that's why we have a very tight share structure. The company has not raised any money in the last 3 years, and so there was no you know, 2 cent financing or founder shares at a penny a stock. And I believe, but when CleanTech went IPO'd in 2022, it was a $10 million raise at 70 cents. So right now, it really shares as low as you can get. Not only do we have a fluorspar project with 740 drill holes at 10 million tons of historical resource, we also have the vanadium project, right? That has 400 million pounds of vanadium. That's a 43-101 compliant, of which the company spent over $20 million. So I highly recommend you guys, your audience, to check out our website. It has all the technical details, the maps, the drill data, historical documents, and all the news release archives. And yeah, it's exciting times ahead.
Well, John, looks like there's a lot of upside. One last question before I let you
Yeah.
go. If you can, you speak very highly of Fluorspar. I can tell you're very bullish on it. Now, you've also mentioned your Kentucky property. What's you mentioned like the Australian comp and with the Magnolia comp. Like, where is your market cap right now? And if you can talk a little bit more about the deep value of what people are missing when it comes to either the project, the company, or Fluorspar itself.
Yeah, the company's market cap right now is $20 million, and as I mentioned, insiders institutions own about 60% of the stock. And our comp are in the hundreds of millions of dollars a range. I think, Steve, I think what is a got you moment, right? There's no skeleton in the closet. I would say it's twofold. As I mentioned before, that North American investors are always late to the game, especially in critical minerals. I cited the case of Nvidia followed by Micron. And you can also look at Rare Earth, for example, right? There are a lot of guys that got their shirts got their clocks cleaned up because they were in Rare Earth stocks in 2018, 2019, when the writing's on the wall. And that exact same Rare Earth project in California have been recycled twice out of bankruptcy. All of a sudden it's trading at a $10 billion market cap. And same thing though with antimony and germanium, anything that's NYSE listed in the US is trading at $1 billion. The missing piece for clean tech is a production, a roadmap to production and actual revenue. Because fluorspar valuation, at least in North America right now, is not measured. It's not like ounces in the ground. It's not like Eric Sprott, right? Or these Toronto bankers are doing league tables of ounces in the ground and theoretical cash flow. North American investors don't do that. American investors don't do that. So what we have to do is generate cash flow and show and demonstrate that every ton of fluorspar we produce out of the ground can yield a profit. And the product is marketable, commercially marketable, desirable by the largest consumers of fluorspar in the United States. In the field of nuclear power plant, in the field of chemical refrigerant, in electrolyte production, in steel making, aluminum making, in surface coating for solar panels, in semiconductor etching and printing and chamber cleaning for the TSMCs. I think once we break through that door and with the first major step of signing an offtake agreement, which we're aiming by the end of the year, that is going to show a path towards cash flow. And that is where the light is going to turn on. And it's not unfathomable to see these kind of explosive actions as you see in many of these rare earth and critical mineral stocks are listed on NYSE American because they had a little plant that's doing cash flow, right? So people can extrapolate that. And so that is a missing piece that we see. And that's what I mentioned to you is our we want to get a bona fide offtake partner and laid out a financing plan to get this mine into production. I think then there's a lot of guys that are sort of, sitting on the other side of the sidewalk with a flashing red, right? So what we need to do is turn that red, the light from red to green, and that's what we're doing. That's why we're working with our partners and working with guys in the ground and working with the off-takers and working with the Kentucky Mines Reclamation Enforcement on the permitting agencies to get our permits submitted, to get our drill holes in the ground, to get our local community on the same page, to get our off-taker signs. Or there's a lot of work ahead in the next 3 to 6 months.
Well, John, look forward to following your story. For those who are listening, I personally am not an investor of Cleantech Vanadium yet. That may change. And John Lee and Cleantech CTV have not paid for this interview. And so please do your due diligence. I'm not giving investment advice. One of the ways you can do that is to reach out to John yourself, follow their ticker, check out their website, reach out to John with any questions you may have. John, if you can be so kind as to give us the ticker, the website, contact information one more time.
Certainly. It's trace out at Texas Ventures. The symbol is CTV, and on OTC over the counter is OT is CTVFF, Frank. There's actually more volume in the OTCs. We're trading sometimes hundreds of thousands, millions of shares over on the Texas Ventures. The story is getting out, and I look forward to this one's winner, and I look forward, Steve, to update your audience in the weeks and months to come.
All right, sounds good. Look forward to it. Thanks, John, for being here.
Thank you, Steve.